88% of the workweek is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
In this episode, we're delving into the critically important issue of pregnancy discrimination in the workplace and what you can do to protect yourself. This episode is a must listen if you are pregnant and working. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board-certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 281, whether it is your first time listening or you've been listening for a while. I am so glad you're spending some time with me today. In this episode, we have Jack Tuckner and Catherine Kreider. Jack Tuckner is a women's rights in the workplace attorney and a founding partner of Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock, and Sipser LLP, a New York-based law firm dedicated to workplace gender rights. With over 20 years of experience, Jack advocates for working women at all stages of their reproductive life cycle, from pregnancy through menopause. His practice focuses on combating sexual harassment, pregnancy discrimination, illegal gender pay disparity, sex discrimination, maternity leave matters, unlawful retaliation, and wrongful termination. Jack has served as an advocate and commentator on women's discrimination issues in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, NBC Nightly News, Good Morning America, NPR, CNN, and more. And we also have Catherine Kreider. Catherine was admitted to the California Bar in 2015. In addition to being a lawyer, Catherine is an active labor and postpartum doula helping families. I love that she has that combination of skill sets. When she's not working with families one-on-one, she teaches childbirth education and postpartum classes for new parents across the United States. Prior to becoming a lawyer, Catherine worked with parents and children in a variety of roles as a licensed elementary and special educator. Just lots of skills that she brings to the table. Catherine also writes for websites on women's health and parenting related topics. Materials she has produced can be found on Forbes.com, Healthline.com, and Education.com. This episode is an absolute must listen for anyone who is navigating pregnancy and working. You are going to learn exactly what is pregnancy-based employment discrimination, some examples of that. You'll learn about the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. You'll learn how to navigate federal and state laws, best practices for notifying your employer about pregnancy, and then ways to protect your rights, what legal protections are available to you, and how you best do that. Again, absolute must listen. Some excellent information in this episode. I hope that you never need it, but if you do, it will be here for you. Now, something else I know that you will actually need is childbirth education. I have a childbirth education option called the Birth Preparation Course. The Birth Preparation Course is my signature online childbirth education class that will get you calm, confident, and empowered to have a beautiful birth with a focus on hospital birth. You can check out all the details and come join me and the thousands of other women who've taken the birth preparation course to help them have that beautiful birth. Check out all the details at drnicolerankins.com/enroll and use the code Dr. Nicole to get an additional 10% off. Okay, let's get into the conversation with Catherine and Jack. Right. Thank you so much for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I am really excited to have you both on and talk about this really important topic.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Dr. Nicole.
Yeah. So why don't you start off each by telling us a bit about yourself and your work?
Well, my name is Jack Tuckner, and I'm the co-founding partner of a law firm in New York City, Tuckner, Sipser, Weinstock & Sipser, that concentrates its practice for the last 26 years on women's rights in the workplace advocacy. And one of the primary forms of that advocacy, which I didn't even expect at the beginning, turned out to be and remains pregnancy discrimination. It's just one of those things that just keeps on occurring. Mm. So although it's gotten so much better over the last 25 years, I'm excited to talk about this here today because of a new law that went into effect that we've been working to get into effect for the last 20 years. Huh. The Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, and that's a game changer. So we can get into that, but this is principally what we do there, where employment discrimination lawyers that concentrates on gender specific issues in the workplace.
Gotcha. And what about you, Catherine?
So I was actually a teacher who became a doula. And then while I was teaching and doing, I went to law school.
Not that you had enough to do. So you were just.
No, but it's perfect because it's actually what drew me so much to the work Jack was doing in the women's sphere, because there's actually not a lot of lawyers who focus on women's health all the way now from pregnancy to the work we're doing in menopause. Yeah. So this is really an exciting area for women's health. Particularly, we're focusing in the employment side of it, but hopefully it'll spread to other sides as well.
Gotcha. And I guess what led you, it's 25 years, that's very long. What led you to even focus on pregnancy-based discrimination?
Well, it's a great question I get all the time. And not this sort of the short version of this, Dr. Nicole, is that since I was a kid, I gravitate to the marginalized, the underdog. I've always hated sort of oppression and bullies. And when I first I spent 10 years as a public defender in the Bronx in New York City. And around the time that it started to sort of get oppressive and it leads to some burnout, and I was thinking, where else can my sort of talents and energies be served to help folk that need it most? And when I was thinking about marginalized communities, it's actually kind of a great story in and of itself, where I was in Hawaii, kind of on a mountaintop, it sort of hit me as the largest majority minority population that's underserved is women. And I grew up in a matriarchal household. I watched in the 60s as my mother couldn't get a credit card without women couldn't get a credit card. Right. Or a bank loan or a mortgage until 1974, when the Credit Card Opportunity Act passed. My father had given my mother a hard time, and it just struck me even then. It's like, I just can't believe it. In my life, my mother, my aunts, these were the people with the emotional intelligence, the left-right brain balance. These were the women who I looked up to and was taught to revere. And then we live in this world where women, men wouldn't put up with it, unequal pay, pregnancy discrimination, sexual harassment, failure to promote. It goes on and on the injustices, the women's health. You know this, right? Women,
sure.
The studies, cardiology, we don't include women. We talk about just men, and the medications have a different effect. It's nuts. So I sort of came by it naturally back then. People will say, now, what's an old white guy doing representing women? I go, well, I was a younger old cisgender white man then. No one was in this space.
Right.
No one. Right. It's just somebody has to stand up and fight for people who are somehow dispossessed or, looking to get equity. And women still don't have equity compared with men. Catherine and I are working now, I'll just say, on menopause issues because finally pregnancy has come into its own in terms of this law that we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. But menopause, if men went through andropause, the same way that women suffer the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause, we would have, you know, andropause spas in the workplace and 1,000%. Andropause leaves.
Right.
And right now, it's like Zippo in the U.S.
Right.
And by the way, with pregnancy, how's this for an injustice? We're the only nation in the world, essentially, in the industrialized world, but basically in the world, there's four other countries you may not have even heard of. All these other nations have paid maternity leaves except us.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just, we just have to keep fighting for equality.
Yeah, keep it. Well, I really admire your passion for it and appreciate the fact that this isn't just a women's issue. It's a human issue and we should all be involved. So tell us, what exactly is pregnancy-based employment discrimination?
Well, do you want me to take this, Catherine? You want to answer that?
Go for it, Jack.
Well, pregnancy-based employment discrimination is when you're treated differently, typically worse, in the workplace as a result of being pregnant. It's pretty simple. If the terms, conditions, benefits, privileges, pay of your employment is different than non-pregnant employees, or it's happening to you because or as a result of your gestational status or your maternity leave, or you need to express milk postpartum in the workplace, that's all pregnancy discrimination.
Gotcha. And who wants to give two or three examples kind of what that might specifically look like?
So an easy example for that we see frequently in the workplaces is people not getting their jobs back after their postpartum leaves. That's unfortunately, that's a reality where they'll find someone else to fill your position or they'll reallocate the tasks while you're gone. And then they'll try and tell you that you've been gone too long. Or even simple things like we frequently see cases where someone's not invited on a work retreat or something because now they have kids. And so the company might try and say that, oh, it would be a hardship for you to come on this retreat. But the truth is that the individual should be at least given the option to come on that retreat and shouldn't just be dictated that they won't. I mean, it can be as obvious as something like not being given the time or the breaks to lactate, as Jack mentioned. That does happen in some places where women are entitled to, if you are a lactating woman, you can take the time to do that during your workday and you are entitled to those breaks. So it can look any number of ways. The disparities can range.
Gotcha.
The purest examples of this, which existed for a long time, even before this law, because the Pregnancy Discrimination Act was passed in 1978. And all that ended up doing was saying, if you're not hired, if you go for an interview and the interviewer says, oh, you're pregnant, you know, well, why would we hire you now? And somehow you're able to confirm that or get it on a recording or put it in writing. That's illegal. And if they say, if you tell your employer you're pregnant, they go, oh, congratulations, you're fired. Obviously, that's pregnancy discrimination. But in between all that, the way that it really played out was being denied flexibility, reasonable accommodations throughout your 9-month pregnancy for pregnancy-related issues. It used to be that you required a pregnancy-related medical condition, like those that I'm sure you deal with, you know, gestational hypertension and diabetes and all the other high-risk kind of pregnancy issues. Now, the natural limitations of pregnancy, so-called, the fact that you're with child, the fact that you'll need to use the restroom more often, the fact that you need to go see your OBGYN for prenatal appointments, those are the things that if they deny that, that's pregnancy discrimination. If you're passed over for promotion, if they say stupid stuff, right, the sort of benign paternalism of, oh, well, we don't want you to fly, we're worried about you. No, that's pregnancy discrimination. And simply, or being forced to resign or quit because of your pregnancy, or because, and here's a big one, when companies will say, and I encounter this all the time, much more so, you know, a few years ago, because now they're starting to finally wake up and smell the coffee companies. But I'll just tell you, 2 weeks ago, Popeyes, the national chicken and whatever they are chain, they were held accountable 2 weeks ago. They paid an undisclosed bunch of money to an employee in Florida who they fired for being pregnant. And the reason they told the EEOC that held them to account and made them settle was that she would have needed accommodations and we didn't want to provide them. Well, except that's what the law says.
Right.
So it happens all the time that women who are pregnant, it's your employers don't really like it. It's your pregnancy's not a profit center.
Mm-hmm.
It's profits over people in American companies. So the notion that we're going to have to be flexible, we can't fire you. And what we're really concerned about is a few months from now, we're going to have to do without you for 3 months and then give you your job back. And that's, you know, we don't think that that's, it's like, get pregnant on your own time, sister.
Gotcha.
That's kind of the corporate ethos about this. But what I was about to say is companies will often say, when is your baby born? This, I have this as a recurring theme. And the, our prospective client or any woman that said, but this was a real case, said to the HR person, well, June so-and-so, whatever. And the HR person then says, yeah, but the problem is that when your water breaks, from given what you've told us, when your due date is, you won't have worked here for a full year. And when people said, well, what does that mean? Well, the Family Medical Leave Act requires that you work for a full year and that you work for a company with at least 50 employees. That's way more than's needed for discrimination claims, which is 15 under federal law. And then they would just kind of gaslight women into quitting and just, they would say, listen, it's not our fault. Write to your congressperson.
Gotcha.
We didn't make the law. Look it up, the FMLA, except they were telling the truth while lying, or they were just completely ignorant. This could happen. What they're saying is true. The FMLA, which provides 12 weeks of unpaid leave for the birth or adoption of your baby or a sick family member or your own serious illness. And that's what I was referring to as unpaid compared to every other civilized country.
Right.
But that's not the only law game in town. So for all the women who aren't, who work for smaller employers or haven't worked a year when their babies are born, they can't still deny your maternity leave because, first of all, they can't deny it now under the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act that just went into effect June 27th, 2023.
Okay.
Game changer.
Right.
Okay, and also contemporaneously with that law, the PUMP Act, PUMP standing for Providing Urgent Maternal Protections for Pregnant, you know, for Nursing Mothers. The PUMP Act now gives 9 million more women, virtually everyone, the right to express milk postpartum for up to a year in the workplace. And this was like this 1-2 punch, finally, that allows most women to say, you know what? I now can have my cake and eat it too, which should be the way it is in a family values culture that we profess to be. I can keep my gainful employment and have a baby and get back to work after I have a baby, no worse for wear.
Gotcha.
I may have over-answered the question.
No. I like it. This is all really important information. Now, you mentioned the federal laws. Let's talk about those. So you talked about the PUMP Act, and even if you want to expand on that a little bit, what that is, and then what is the pregnancy? I already am going to mess it up, so I'm going to let you guys say it.
The Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, which we've been trying to get past, when I say we, all of us stakeholders that have been working on this, just like now we're working on a Menopause Workers' Fairness Act with Congress, we've been working on this for years. Conservatives, Republicans voted against it time and time again. We don't need that, they said. Finally, it finally passed last year. This law is like the Americans with Disabilities Act for pregnant women.
Okay.
Simplest way to say it.
Okay.
It requires reasonable accommodations and flexibility and makes pregnancy itself. Pregnancy is not a disability itself, but it makes pregnancy a protected status, so-called. So when you say to your company, I'm pregnant, and one important thing, which we can get to, but I want to, before I forget it, when you notify your company that you're pregnant, best practice, you do it in writing, because what happens is if you just say it at the water cooler, or if you wait till you're showing, and people know you're pregnant and your company is like, dang, we don't really, you know, Jane's pregnant and why don't we manage her out the door now? And if they put you on a performance improvement plan to write you up and you haven't told them you're pregnant, particularly when you're not yet showing or you're working remotely, they get to say, we didn't even know you were pregnant. So we're just, this is a performance issue. Now, if you send an email, and this is the way to do it, you simply send a friendly email to HR, to benefits, if it's a smaller company, to your boss, it doesn't matter, but you want it in writing where you're saying, I just want to share the news that we're pregnant. And I'm, you know, we're so happy, and I'm just following up, trying to find out what the company's maternity leave policies are. That email is your paper trail. Very important.
Gotcha.
Right? Because if you deal with an adverse employment action, like more hostility, a demotion, failure to promote, or a termination, on the heels of that, well, that's illegal. So I could go on and on, but
No. So that's it provides a level. You have to get accommodations, reasonable accommodations, of course. And I'm sure people can argue about that, but reasonable accommodations and related to pregnancy, including like going to appointments. Even.
And if you're working for a strict employer where it's like, hey, I need permission, or, you know, I have to get up and go to the bathroom. And they say, no, you know, hold it. Wait to get coverage. You need coverage right before you can go. No, not when you're pregnant. When your physician tells you you need to stay hydrated and you need to eat crackers at your desk to stave off morning sickness, for example, they can't tell you there's no eating at your desk.
Gotcha.
So if you need to stand, or if you need to sit because you're a hostess or whatever, and you need to sit occasionally during the day, they have to give you time to sit. Anything that makes sense, if you're driving too much, even remote work, if you're commuting an hour and a half each way and you're in your second or third trimester and it's painful or difficult and you have to pee.
Gotcha.
They would want to let you were going to ask for, and they're going to likely allow you remote work. And why? Because the only thing an employer can say to oppose it is, well, that's a bridge too far, young lady. That means that would be an undue hardship on our business. And if it's for 3 months or 6 months, it's not an undue hardship, likely. I mean, unless you work for a tiny organization that can actually pull that off. But if you work for a company with at least 15 now, that's 15, not 50, like I mentioned with the FMLA, 15 employees, you're covered by the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, which also protects women from discrimination based on pregnancy and sex. Speaking of which, pregnancy discrimination is always sex discrimination. And pregnancy discrimination is almost always disability discrimination, because at least you're either perceived as being disabled during your gestational cycle, which is just as illegal as actual disability discrimination.
Right.
Or postpartum, Dr. Nicole, it is now established, even insurance carriers agree with this, at least 6 weeks post-vaginal delivery, 8 weeks post-C-section, you're disabled. So they have to give you short-term disability to recover.
Gotcha.
Might not be paid,
right,
but you have to be able to take maternity leave.
So I'm going to keep it real with you. Women's peak reproductive years are between late teens and late 20s. Some research indicates that an ideal first pregnancy is at age 23. Well, that just doesn't realistically line up with most people's timelines. I was barely getting started with life at 23, much less thinking about having children. And that's where Ritual comes in. Their 3-in-1 fertility support was designed in partnership with an OBGYN and a fertility specialist. And it uses clinically studied ingredients and clinically studied dosages to support conception outcomes. As an OBGYN, I trust Ritual products because they take quality seriously. Their fertility support is made traceable, received the Clean Label Project Purity Award. It's sugar-free, vegan, gluten, soy, and major allergen-free without synthetic colorants. And it has those three clinically studied ingredients, including myo-inositol, which helps support egg health, promotes normal ovulation cycles, helps support healthy hormone levels. NAC provides antioxidant support and helps support ovarian health. And CoQ10 helps support follicular health and cellular energy production. Now, for even more pre-pregnancy support, you can bundle the fertility support with Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin. That multivitamin has omega-3 DHA, folate, iron, and more to support key nutrient needs for preconception. So bring the fertility science back to your bedroom with 3-in-1 fertility support from Ritual. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/Dr. Nicole. That's ritual.com/Dr. Nicole for 25% off.
Something else to know about the laws is that those are the national laws, but
yes,
depending on where you live in the country, you also want to consider state and more local laws because you might actually have greater protection under those.
Thank you.
Jack was mentioning numbers like 50 and 15, but there are state and local ordinances that cover all companies in the area or only require 5 employees or something like that.
Gotcha.
So you do like, even if you work for a very small company, you might want to look into your state and local ordinances because you may still have protections there too.
Yeah. And Catherine, what is a good place or how do you figure out what your state, like, do you Google, what do you say? Like, you know, I'm in Virginia. Would I say like Virginia pregnancy law and see what comes up? So how can you figure that out?
That's okay. So there's different ways. So you can go to Google, right? And there's all those like AI different devices. You can ask your AI devices. Obviously whatever you get back on those, you do want to dig a little further because discrepancies can happen with technology.
Right.
You can also, in your local area, there's going to be employment lawyers. There's going to be things like that. So if you sense that there is the possibility of discrimination, I'm pretty sure Jack would agree with me on this. At a certain point, you do want to like loop in a lawyer. Many lawyers would do basic consultations for very cheap or even free. There's also different legal groups within your local area that you can research. But a good place to start is actually honestly going to HR at your company, seeing what they believe they're required to do, because many times they'll give you some information. And then if that works for you, fine. But if it's not, then you might want to start digging a little deeper too. HR can be helpful for you in some situations as well. Jack, I know you have some resources you like to give out specifically.
Well, I mean, I believe there's an organization called workplacefairness.org, which lists every state's laws with respect to discrimination. But also, again, this is the simplest Google search because, and every state, almost every state has a state agency, except for maybe Alabama. There's a couple that don't even have state laws for discrimination. But almost every state has a specific administrative agency that handles discrimination claims. So if you just Google pregnancy discrimination in my state, you'll find out. But what is important, what Catherine said, which was so important, is that in New York and Connecticut, where I'm a lawyer and Catherine's a lawyer in California, the bluer states, so-called, tend to have more progressive laws. New York City has a Pregnant Workers Fairness Act of its own for 10 years, which is just wildly progressive. And New York City's human rights law in and of itself is extremely employee-oriented and centric. And New York only requires four employees to bring a claim, and New York State, only one. So wherever you work in New York State, if you're the only employee, you're entitled to protection from pregnancy discrimination.
Sure.
So it's very important that you're to know that you're not out of the box if you work for an employer with, let's say, 8 employees, except in some states have 15 employee thresholds too. It is sad when we hear from an employee who says, you know, from somewhere other than New York or Connecticut, where they say, I'm being discriminated against, and I work for an employer with 8 employees, for example, and their own state law and federal law doesn't protect them. It's like, there's really nowhere to go. But most of us work for an employers with at least 15 or work in places where there's a state or city statute. Massachusetts, New York, California, there's a bunch of states that do way better than federal law.
Do you see that most people who are impacted by this, do they tend to be in lower wage professions, or is it across the gamut in terms of who's affected?
It's across the gamut. Totally. I'm representing someone now who's earning $600K plus a year. I mean, it's a pregnancy case. It doesn't matter. It's one of those companies are sort of equal opportunity discriminators when it comes to pregnancy, right? Because it's the same issues. It's just, it's probably easier to mess with someone on a lower level. And sometimes there's a lack of resources involved but no, it's everyone.
Okay. All right. Now you said best practices for notifying an employer that you're pregnant. definitely do it in writing. And do you just say, like, I'm pregnant? Do you say anything about due date? Do you say, should you let them know as soon as you know? What about the timing of that?
So one thing that's interesting about timing is that some people might be tempted to wait to the 3-month mark, right? Because as we know, medically, we're less likely to have a miscarriage after that point. The problem is in those first 3 months is when many women experience a lot of complications with morning sickness, or like are unable to go to work for some reason because they're so ill from the initial stages of a pregnancy. So if you are experiencing anything like that, you want to get it documented sooner rather than later. Because if you were to wait to the 3-month mark, they might already be starting their plans to manage you out or be otherwise concerned about your health. And that could lead to job performance issues in and of itself, and you wouldn't be protected. So there is a fine line about how early you want to notify and what feels right for you. Obviously, Jack and I can't tell you the day you find out you're pregnant, go tell your boss. but I would strongly urge listeners, don't wait too long if you're showing those strong like pregnancy symptoms and it's impacting your life, because that they can start managing you out before you would say anything to them.
Like if you have severe morning sickness in the first trimester, you might need to notify your employer before you notify even your parents. Because you may not want to announce it to the whole world if there's any risk that you might not maintain the pregnancy. But if you want to maintain your economic lifeline, as Catherine just eloquently put it, you really want to notify them sooner than later in writing so that they can't get the jump on you and mess with you. I mean, I can't tell you how, I mean, it's still the number one cause of action out of our office with all of the unequal pay, gender pay disparity, failure to promote, sexual harassment, glass ceiling, glass cliff, all the issues that women put deal with as women in the workplace. Pregnancy discrimination is the number one challenge for women.
And I assume you can include some language like keep it confidential. Like, is that okay? Like, don't only only those who need to know, that kind of thing. Is that safe?
It's your HIPAA protected medical information.
So what should you do if you find yourself needing accommodations during pregnancy? What's the best way to ask for them?
So it's really a conversation between you and your boss. And I think that's sometimes where people get it wrong on both sides, right? Like the employers and the employees. You want to come in and have a conversation about, this is my medical need. How can we meet it in this business environment so that we're both sustainable, right? Because no one wins if you come into the environment and you're saying, it's my way or the highway, I don't care what happens to your business, or I don't care what happens to you as an employee. Like, the goal is to find the middle ground that you can all be satisfied on. So if both sides can come in to a conversation with those attitudes, we do see great success sometimes. And there is no need for a Jack or I to enter the scene. Like, many times, like, if you can come to your employer and have those productive conversations, it can work out great, and people can have very simple solutions for their problems. Now, the problem comes when there's some kickback, right? And either side starts saying, well, that doesn't meet my needs. So at that point, that's where, if you're the employee, you really need a paper trail from your doctor being like, no, this is a necessary accommodation for this reason for the employee. And then once you have that paper trail, if the employer is still pressing back on you, that's where someone like a Jack or I can send an email reminding your employer that there are laws on the books, that they have to, you know, meet you partway with this. They have to, you know, provide accommodations. If they're still refusing at that point, then, you know, it can escalate further. But the goal would be we start from a productive conversation of everyone trying to help everyone through this process.
That makes sense.
Dr. Nicole, may I just tell a little case law story? So just to explain this better and why now happens to be the best time ever in sort of the history of the United States to be a working woman who's also pregnant, and again, separate and apart from what's going on the age, you know, women's right to choose aspect of this. But women have it, they if you want to end a pregnancy now, that may be illegal in this country, and women have, dying now over that. But if you're voluntarily choosing to have a pregnancy, that's pregnancy. That's also been an uphill battle for many women and still is for some women. Peggy Young was a woman who worked for United Parcel Service for years, was a driver. When she was pregnant, she happened to have had a high-risk pregnancy, but her obstetrician wrote a note and said she can't lift more than 10 pounds or something like that. UPS, and she was already a so-called air driver, meaning that her deliveries were tend to be like letters, lighter. But occasionally she had a 25-pound package. She could have easily had someone help her with it, or they could have given her office work. So here's what happened. UPS back then, and this was just in before 2015, UPS used to provide light duty to three classes of employees, those who lost their licenses through DWI convictions, for heaven's sake, those who were injured on the job, and those who had other kinds of disabilities. But when it came to pregnant women, they said, no, what are you talking about? It's not a disability.
Right.
It's voluntary, sister. And nobody told you to do it. And the law, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act at that time, and this is what's been the problem for decades, said that they only have to provide accommodations, you know, to people when their inability or ability to work is similar to someone else's inability to work. And they were saying, you don't have any comparators because you're pregnant women. Sorry, she had to leave their employ, lose her health insurance. That case went all the way to the Supreme Court before the Supreme Court became today's Supreme Court that would have ruled against her. And in a 6-3 decision, they ruled for her and said, you know what? We're reinterpreting the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. And now we're saying, here's what it means. Every pregnant woman, when she needs, you have to give her special treatment now. That's what it is.
Right.
It's a protected status. You simply have to do it. And on the heels of that, finally, Congress passed the law called the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, but it took several more years to become law, which now codifies it and says simply, pregnancy, if you need light duty, they have to give you light duty.
Gotcha.
They can't force you to lift 50-pound boxes if it's not medically advisable, it's all good right now under that law. And what we're finding out, just like the, what was the name, you know, the Popeyes, this was just a couple of weeks ago, and this is a national chain. They didn't even know about it, the law. So we can't assume that our employers care and are up to date, which is why self-advocacy, which is really putting everything in writing, that you're pregnant, and then if your boss says something stupid, do you plan on having any more children? That's illegal. You know, saying something that they think, oh, it's a compliment, but it's really just benign paternalism again, that's illegal. Touching your belly without your permission, that's illegal.
Yeah.
So anything that feels like, seriously, you asked me that, you said that, you're excluding me from a meeting, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You say, I shouldn't go out anymore on client meetings in the evenings or play golf because it's not a good look or because you can't drink. Well, that's pregnancy discrimination and sex discrimination, right?
Gotcha.
So women need to know this, right? So that they don't get managed out the door. And if the marriage can't be saved because of the way they're treating you as a result of pregnancy, by documenting everything, you'll be in a much stronger position to command severance. They'll pay you to leave because they're going to want you to sign a general release of claims. I'm just talking about when things do go really south before they fire you and you have to hire lawyers like us and sue them.
Right.
You still can hold them accountable because you've documented the pregnancy discrimination. It's that simple.
Got it. So then what should you do? This kind of leads nicely into the next question. What should you do if you feel like your rights have been violated during pregnancy? Number one, you said keep all the documentation, but if you can't come to that agreement, then how do you, what should you do from there?
Well, first of all, a lot of time, here's another sort of mistake. Some people think, you know, pregnancy discrimination is only about hiring and firing decisions. Mm-hmm. No, it's about all these things we've been talking about. But people will sometimes say, no, I write everything down. I've kept a diary. Well, that kind of doesn't count. You want to keep this paper trail in doc to your employer. So you really want to send emails where you maintain that thread. You send an email, they respond, say, you know, noted. Most of the time, when employees complain to their company's HR, they all, I mean, I've been hearing this, these mantras for 20 years. Companies will say, We're an equal opportunity employer. Thank you so much for complaining. We take complaints like this very seriously in this company. We're going to investigate it now, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. They rarely come back and find for you. But that paper trail of your complaining, they're responding, they're investigating. If anything happens untoward, if things go south in any way, that's not only discriminatory, but there's another law, you know, aspect of the law. It's retaliatory because their company's not allowed to treat you worse simply because you're standing up for your rights as a pregnant woman in your workplace.
Sure.
So you've got a lot of juice if you know how to exercise it. And again, mostly it's that paper trail. Now, it might behoove you to call a plaintiff side, an employee rights lawyer. You know, you could certainly call us, but the licensure, if we're not, I've represented women in 20 states over the years because we can do it from afar if it's negotiating them out or filing an EEOC charge. But if you right. end up in court, it's still best to find an employment lawyer in your state or
right.
city.
Right. Right.
And by the way, the National Employment Lawyers Association, that's based in San Francisco, but most every state has an affiliate organization. You could call them, NELA, N-E-L-A, because they will have a list of employment lawyers in your state or city to sort of recommend or hook you up with.
Okay. So what or if are there any circumstances where it's legal for an employer to fire you during pregnancy?
There are situations. While you are protected, like you can't go rogue. It is one situation I like to describe it. So this is more of a menopause example, but it applies to pregnancy as well. There was an individual who was experiencing menopause symptoms. Uh-huh. And so she decided without company permission to like change her wardrobe requirement. And she didn't go through the proper steps. She didn't file the paperwork with the company, explain to them all the situation, all that. And so she just kind of went rogue, changed her wardrobe and all that. And ultimately the company did fire her because she wasn't following their policies. Mm-hmm. And although she pointed back and was like, no, I should have been protected. Like I was going through the situation. They're like, well, you didn't notify us properly. You didn't go through the right channels. And so as a result, like we can fire you.
Gotcha.
So I think the number one thing people should be aware of is this supposed to be a collaborative process? So the biggest way that you can harm yourself with your company is by not going through the collaborative process mm-hmm. and by kind of making unilateral decisions to like, oh, I'm just going to work remote today because I decided to.
Sure.
Or I'm going to take extra breaks today because I feel the need to without mm-hmm. getting that approved and clarified and taking the steps.
Gotcha.
Jack, I'm sure you could think of other examples.
Well, I have one big one, which is this. Just like you could be fired by your company. So most of us, here's just an important, I just want to back up a second. Mm-hmm. Most of us these days are so-called at-will employees. And for those who don't know what it means, at-will employment means you don't have a contract of employment and you don't have a contract of employment. A lot of people say they do. They have an offer letter and it might be 10 pages, but within it, it'll say you're an at-will employee. It's not a binding like 3-year contract. Most of us can no longer command that. Mm. The only contract that some employees have are union contracts, so they're the beneficiary of that collective contract. When I was young, the 35% of the workforce was unionized. It's down to like 5% or so.
Right.
So most of us are at-will employees. And what does that mean? We could be fired. Here's what the definition of at-will employment is. We could be fired at any time for any reason or, ready, for absolutely no reason at all.
Mm.
Except in Montana. 49 states are at will. Montana says after 6 months, you have to give somebody a reason, but it's Montana. There's like 900,000 people in the whole state. So 49 states, you could be fired at any time for any reason or no reason, but you can't be fired for illegal reasons. But you could be fired when you're black, when you're Muslim, mm-hmm. when you're over 40, when you're disabled, when you're gay, when you're pregnant. You just can't be fired because of any of those reasons.
Right.
So if your company says, and this is the big one that's a major problem in like these giant companies that have these mass layoffs like Google,
mm-hmm.
even though they catch up in these mass firings, more pregnant women than others, which is because of the algorithms in AI and other, we don't need to get into, but women, pregnant women often draw the short end of the stick. Mm-hmm. But when there's a mass layoff or when your company says, listen, we're really sorry. We're sorry you're on maternity leave and we have to tell you this, for example. Well, when you're pregnant, we have to tell you this, but we're eliminating your position. And if it's true, if they're actually saying, look, we're how poorly we're doing. We're laying off 10 people. You're one of them. We're not going to replace you with a non-pregnant woman.
Right.
If that's true, that's not discrimination. That's just life in the big city,
okay.
Right?
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense. So then as we wrap up, what would you say is the most frustrating part of the work you do?
Well, the most frustrating part is that it never ends in terms of the injustice. So for somebody who cares about this and you're kind of like, you know, after 30-something years, I'm like, really, it's the same issues arise over and over. And it's frustrating to keep, as it was with the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, as it is now with menopause issues, to keep banging our heads against the wall to try to obtain justice for women, for people of color, by the way, for all marginalized communities. And by the way, black and brown women, everything we've been talking about, have it way worse than white women in every one of these areas, with microaggressions, with every type of discrimination, even in terms of care, you might, right, in terms of results and outcomes medically. So the most frustrating part is that, you know, sometimes it feels like we go backwards. I mean, including the way it's kind of feeling now. And, you know, the progressive mantra right now of we ain't going back, we're not going back, right? We're not going back, but we might go back. And there are certain factions in our world that want to go back.
Right.
So that's what's frustrating. Because, you know, it's the progress is so slow. It's like in my lifetime, will menopause now be protected? I was worried about it for my own daughters with pregnancy, with equal pay. There's another law called paycheck fairness. Women still earn way less than men across the board, except the Paycheck Fairness Act has been stuck in committee in Congress since 1997. Guess why? There are certain groups and politicians that oppose it. So that's what's frustrating. Yeah. It's like, this is not a world that has equity for women yet, like men.
Yeah. What about you, Catherine? What's frustrating for you?
I think that it's the lack of information people get about their rights, which is why thank you so much for having us on today, because it's so important that we get the opportunity to share this information with people, because so many people just don't know what pregnancy discrimination actually looks like, what laws are out there to help them. And I think that it's just, we can fight so hard to get things through Congress or to help write legislation or to fight it on the judicial side. But as much as those battles happen, if people aren't utilizing it and understanding that it's there, then it's not actually being a benefit to them. And I think that that's something that we feel really strongly about, is we want this to be a benefit to people. So thank you for sharing this information. And then the additional like frustration with that is when people get false information. So I really encourage people to like dig deeper. Don't just accept it. If a department tells you like, this is what we do at our company, this is what is, like, double check. Is that actually the rule in your city or state? Are there other protections available to you? Because a lack of information and false information are very harmful things for particularly women who are pregnant.
Yep, I can see that.
And may I just add, because I think it's important. One of all the laws, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, Amendments Act, protects pregnant women because it still meets the definition. That's the 2008 revision to the Americans with Disabilities Act, now covers pregnancy-related conditions, and the FMLA. Because if you do have worked for a full year for a company with at least 50 employees, the FMLA does provide 12 weeks of protected leave where you have to be given your job back. And if you work in states like New York, we have our own paid family leave, right? So people who are lucky enough to work in New York State have paid maternity leave.
Really important, really important. So then on the flip side, what's the most rewarding part of your work?
Well, the most rewarding part is when we do, you know, which happens frequently, when our clients get a certain amount, semblance of workplace justice. And we love that. I mean, I love that. That's a daily thing. It's not like a Boston Legal episode. It's not like, you know, it doesn't have to be a dramatic or we're going to trial in 5 years and you won $10 million. It's just you held your employer to account. We took our little Davy slingshot and pinged Goliath in the forehead. We got them to back off, to pay you money, taught them a lesson. Women can square their shoulders. And I say women, but you know, anyone who's been discriminated against, who feels marginalized, when you work with a lawyer who just will work with you, you know, many lawyers work on a contingent basis in employment law. They don't expect to get paid the obscene hourly rates that lawyers get unless you happen to make a lot of money and you're still working and need help and counsel. But if you're fired, most of us work on a basic contingent basis. People worry like, oh, how could I pay for a lawyer?
Right.
You'd be surprised. If you have the facts, you know why? Because when you win in an employment case, there's civil rights cases. This is a civil rights act, civil rights laws. Your company will pay your attorney when you prevail in court. That's why. So that's what's most rewarding is basically actually helping, which is why I went into it and Catherine went into this. We actually want to help people, right, is our, you know, is to make a difference and help people like most lawyers say in law school. And then, you know, they often forget about it when they get a big money job offer.
What about you, Catherine? What's the most rewarding part for you?
So for me, I love seeing families grow. And enabling families to grow. And I think that pregnancy discrimination actually prevents families from growing, right? Because people can't afford to have their families. It makes them regret maybe their decision to get pregnant because now like their life situation looks different. So for me, what I really love is hearing the stories of the success of their family and going on to have a great family life after whatever they've gone through. Because I think that's something we can all rally behind, right? Is we want strong families. We want healthy families. We want you know, people to be happy and have a good future.
So
that's what excites me is hearing the success stories down the road of how their families have grown and gotten further along.
Yeah, definitely. So then what is your favorite piece of advice that you would give to an expectant mother or someone who's pregnant?
Well, my favorite piece of advice is you have rights. Exercise them. Get informed a little bit about what we're talking about and know it. You know, I've been explaining, if you look for me on TikTok, I've been making videos about pregnancy discrimination that explain some of these things. We're also both on LinkedIn, Catherine Kreider, Jack Tuckner, or, you know, you could reach out to us at our firm. But the best advice, though, that I have is document, document, document. Put everything in writing around your discrimination. You doesn't have to be contentious. Just document it factually. This is what happened today. I told my boss said this thing. This is what happened. Just make sure you're just not having conversations because they circle the sun with all the other etheric spirits and they're gone. Mm-hmm. And reality is you need a paper trail. And I would, it's like prepare for the best or, you know, expect the word, whatever the expression is, you know, I forgot the expression, expect that most women have, you know, a pregnancy that they have a pregnancy, they're working, they go out on maternity leave, they return. Mm-hmm. Most are no worse for wear and it's fine. Mm-hmm. But the numbers are so outrageous, even the EEOC, that's the number one claim. So it's obviously a thing. It's not in your head. It's not in your head. Right. So instead of waiting and just going, I don't know if you really meant it that way. There's no downside to documenting, even if you're not sure. Mm-hmm. It's just if you're feeling diminished, if the conditions of your employment in any way feel degraded ever since you were, you know, pregnant, people are just even looking at you differently. The assignments are different. You should note that because otherwise these are the little things that, these little cracks that add up and get bigger. The next thing you know, you're demoralized and they find a way to get rid of you. And it was all because you were expecting or you're a new mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even postpartum, right? It's a difficult time to manage that whole first year postpartum, being a new mother, your caregiver responsibilities and your work responsibilities. So it's just best to have the company just sit back and say, you know what? This is a smart employee who's documented everything, and we probably don't want to mess with her.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. What about you, Catherine? What's your favorite piece of advice?
So I think it's really important to stress to people that we're not meant to do this alone. Mm. And so whether that means bringing in a lawyer, whether that means having doctors and doulas for your birth, whatever it is, and that starts like, it obviously starts before you're pregnant. But I think that part of the parenthood journey is learning not to do it alone. And that's really true during your pregnancy. So whether, you know, you're feeling discriminated against and you need support groups or you need friends to rally around you or whatever it is, I think my biggest piece of advice is don't isolate yourself, because that's where you start questioning everything and you won't get the help you need. And you really talk to people, whether, you know, that's your doctors, your midwives, your friends, your family, your lawyer, whoever it might be that you need in your life. But don't isolate yourself. Don't try and do this alone, because that's when it gets so much tougher, so much harder for you. And it's not necessary.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So you mentioned that you all are on LinkedIn and your names. We'll put those links in the profile. What's your website or other places where people can find you?
Well, our website is Women's Rights NY. So it's just Women's, W-O-M-E-N-S, Rights, R-I-G-H-T-S-N-Y for newyork.com. You can reach out to us there. If you send an email to info@womensrightsny.com, I will see it. Our office manager will see it. And that's what might start an intake process. Mm-hmm. You could send DMs on LinkedIn, on TikTok. You could give us a call at 212-766-9100 and speak to Katie or Deborah or Mia. But, you know, the idea is that if you want, this is all confidential. Mm-hmm. And if you want or need some advice, again, you're probably best if you're in Wisconsin, you can find an employment lawyer in Wisconsin. And it's always helpful to have a lawyer who knows the local rules, who knows the local laws, than it would be to just, you know, go to someone who hasn't a clue and right. can't really go to court in your state. But if you have a question, and you could certainly still reach out to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate you both being here. I learned a lot. I didn't know about this act that was recently passed in 2023. This is really important information that every family who's having a baby should know. So thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, Dr. Nicole, I wanted to just tell you that, do you know that when I first started doing this, it was OBGYNs who were the main source of our cases, because women would go, you would say to them, how you feeling? And they'd go, I feel great, but
right.
damn, if work isn't hostile and harassing me. And that's when, you know, so that's how sometimes you might be the first to hear that someone's dealing with workplace stress based on the pregnancy.
Yeah, definitely. And I will say, sadly, like, the medical profession isn't that great about accommodations either. So anyway, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Dr. Nicole. Thank you for having us.
Wasn't that a great conversation? It's obvious that they come to this work from a place of service and really wanting to help people have the protection and fairness that they deserve. And I really appreciate them coming on. Now, after every episode, when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, which are my thoughts and takeaways from the conversation. Here are my Dr. Nicole's notes from my conversation with Catherine and Jack. Number one, pregnancy rights are a human issue, not just a women's rights issue. This is something that we all should be concerned about, whether we have children or not, whether we're a man or a woman, we all should care about pregnancy rights issues. So I can appreciate that Jack has made this a focus of his career. It really is embarrassing how we as a society, you know, want to make choices for women, but yet don't support families and don't support pregnant women and people in helping to have the best pregnancy and be in circumstances where they can thrive. So just know that these issues are really human rights issues, and we can all get behind them. Okay, next up, they talked about the critical importance of documenting things when you are wanting to know or wanting to pursue any concerns about your rights. I want to encourage you to document things in another area, and that is in your prenatal care, okay? And I'm not saying that you need to document what your doctor or what your midwife is doing in order to protect against some potential future lawsuits or anything like that, or sue anybody. What I'm wanting you to document are, one, things that you think of when you're not in the office. When you're like, you know, in the kitchen and like, oh, I had this question about this or that, jot that down in a note, a voice note in your phone, so that you can have it with you to take to your next appointment. The reality is that prenatal care, these short appointments, they're just not set up for those long conversations if you're going with a traditional doctor's type appointment. Midwives probably have more time. But even that may not be a lot. So you want to make the most of your time. So definitely just keep like a running note. I use Google. I'm like in the Google sphere. Google has Keep Notes. I'm sure Apple has Notes. So you just keep a running list of things, notes you want to think about, things that pop up in your head, or comments after the appointment. Just jot down a few things so that you can go back and remember it. Remember that pregnancy brain is real, for sure, for sure, for sure. So document some things during your prenatal care journey so that you can make the most of those visits. And then the last thing I want to say is to echo Catherine's advice of don't do it alone. Get help, okay? Get help. You are not meant to go through your pregnancy and parenting journey alone, whether that's just with you and your partner or just you in general. This is not meant to be something that is done alone. Children and babies should be born and supported in community. And in the past, that community often was blood community, so family in that regard. These days, community has evolved, and it can look a lot of different ways. It can be community online, even whether that's something like a Facebook group. You know, I have a free Facebook group called The Inner Circle. You can hop in there. So it may look like online community. It may look like paid community in the form of a pregnancy doula or a postpartum doula. I definitely see more and more value in postpartum doulas for sure. It may look like, a mom's group in your community. It may look like a religious faith community. Just don't do this alone. Get that help that you need in order to have the best pregnancy, the best birth, the best parenting experience. All right. So there you have it. Please share this podcast with a friend. Also leave me a review in Apple Podcasts. I love to hear what you think about the show, and it helps other women to find the show. And it really, really is important in helping the show to grow so that we can reach and serve as many people as possible. Do also check out the Birth Preparation Course, my online childbirth education class that will get you calm, confident, and empowered to have a beautiful birth. Check out all the details at drnicolerankins.com/enroll and use the code Dr. Nicole to get an additional 10% off. So that is it for this episode. Do come on back next week and remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
Percent of the work week is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise Ready AI.